Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey everyone, welcome to a mini episode of Sarah's Bookshelves Live. Mini episodes feature book bloggers, Instagrammers, or regular readers that apply to be on the show, and they focus solely on the book recommendations portion of the show. Today's guest is Jada Justice, and she's known on Instagram as The History Mom. Jada is a writer and blogger at The History Mom, where she reviews historical sites and experiences for families. She was recently featured on NBC 12 RVA's Parenting and was a panelist at the 1455 Summer Literary Festival. Previously, she worked as a legislative director for Representative Sue Myrick on Capitol Hill in Washington. She majored in history and political science at Furman University, and she is originally from the historical town of Kings Mountain, North Carolina, but she now lives in Richmond, Virginia, which is also where I live. And finally, she got bumped to the top of the waiting list to be a guest on the show because she supports the show on Patreon. Welcome, Jada.
Thank you for having me.
Y'all probably picked this up during her introduction, but we are going to be talking a lot about historical books and historical fiction books today, which is something that I used to read a lot of, but don't anymore. I mean, I do read some still now, but I don't read as much anymore as I used to. So I'm glad to have you on the show so you can offer your expertise in an area that I don't play in that often anymore. So tell us a little bit about your reading taste sort of within the historical fiction and history nonfiction genres.
Well, I grew up loving historical fiction, and so I just have continued that as a history major in college. And I really love to read about historical women during different time periods. That's my favorite thing to read about. So there's so many new books out now that focus on women and what women were doing during these battles that we're hearing about. What were the women doing on the home front? So that's really my favorite thing to read about.
I do feel like a lot of books have been coming out about women in war lately.
Yes.
And not even just fighting, but also like that. What is that code breaking book that came out? The Code Girls?
Right. Yes. Code Girls and Hidden Figures.
Right.
Like all of books that really show that throughout history, we're reading, you learn the dates and figures and time periods in history class. And you're just learning about the major battles. But really, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes back at home with women and children that we're just now starting to explore, which I love.
Yeah, I'm glad women are getting their due finally.
Yes, great. That's great.
And what else do you read outside of historical fiction and history nonfiction?
I read a lot of parenting books, a lot of personal growth books. I love the Enneagram, so anything personality related.
What are you? What's your number?
I'm a 2.
Oh, so I just took an online test recently. I always sort of thought I was certain things, but I never actually took a test. I'm an 8.
Okay. I love just knowing others' numbers too, but especially like with my husband and kids, because that just helps you relate to them a little bit better. So I love reading anything about personality tests that I can find.
I like that too. And I also like the way that you called these types of books personal growth books. Was that right?
Yes.
I hate the term self-help, so I'm glad to hear of a different name for it. I've been using the term life improvement. Personal growth might be better, though. I might have to adopt your term.
Oh, good. And I also read some contemporary fiction, especially this past year. I've tried to get some of the, you know, most exciting contemporary fiction that's coming out. So I tend to stay away from mysteries, thrillers, anything that's too scary or too hard like that. I tend to shy away from that.
Are you an HSP?
I am.
And y'all, an HSP is a highly sensitive person. Is that right?
Right. Yes.
And that is an actual like personality designation. And the only reason I know about this is through hearing Anne Bogle talk about it.
Yes.
On What Should I Read Next? And I'm sure many of you all
listened to that podcast as well and probably have heard her talk about that. But I'm not an HSP. And obviously, if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis, you know I'm not an HSP because of how dark I can go with my reading.
Right. Yes. I don't like anything dark or twisty. I don't like reading about things happening to children or women, you know, moms. I can't handle that. So I tend to stay away from those.
Fair enough. And you're doing something interesting this year with your reading. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I took a look at all of my bookshelves and categorized everything and just realized I had so many historical books. I tend to collect those throughout the year as I'm going to different historical sites that I visit. I see a book and I'm like, oh, I want to read that. And I grab it and then it ends up sitting on my shelf. So this year I've decided it's my year of historical reading. So I'm going to try to make 85% of the books that I read this year historical fiction or nonfiction. And that would be up from about 51% that I read last year was historical fiction and nonfiction. So that's quite a bump up. So it's a lofty goal, but it kind of goes along with my blog that I write.
Sure.
I try to read books about the sites that I'm reviewing or the sites that I'm seeing so I can recommend books for children and teens on my site. So it also falls into that. But I have so many books, particularly about the Civil War and being in Richmond. I think I've collected every book ever written about Richmond in the Civil War. So this is my year to get through those.
And are you allowing yourself to read off of your current shelves or are you sticking to what you already have in the house?
I am allowing myself to read some that are, you know, getting from the library. I'm not just sticking to my current shelves. I'm trying to get through that big backlog on my shelf. There will be new books that come out that I want to read. And also with my site, I want to stay up to date with what's coming out, you know, along with these historical sites. So, for example, I'm looking at Colonial Williamsburg. I don't have a lot of Colonial Williamsburg books on my shelf, so I am going to the library to pick up some books about those.
Sure. Do you like the I Survived books for kids?
I love the I Survived books, yes. My 11-year-old has gone through all of them. We love those books.
My son is into those right now. I think he's reading... He was alternating between Hurricane Katrina and 9/11. Wow, that's a pairing, actually.
Yes.
Speaking of an HSP, right?
Right. Well, but the way they write those is such a great way to introduce these really tough subjects to kids and have them put themselves in the shoes of kids that were there at that time. I remember we went to actually Italy and my son had read the book, I Survived Pompeii. And so when we were walking around the streets of Pompeii, he kept saying, this is where, I believe the character, I can't remember the character's name, this is where he was standing and this is where he could have been. And it just really brings history to life for kids. And I love those type of books.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way I prefer to learn history is through an interesting book. So I'm glad that they have these kinds of things for kids now because I don't remember this kind of stuff being available when I was a kid. All right. So let's get into your book recommendations.
Okay.
As usual, Jada is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she does not love, and one upcoming release that she's excited about. And almost all of your books are historical fiction or history nonfiction.
Yeah.
I think your do not like is maybe not historical fiction. Is that
right?
Okay. Tell me about the first old book you love.
Okay, well, with all the categories, I try to figure out a historical fiction and then a nonfiction for each category. So the first historical fiction book that I love, an old book that I love, is The Last Ballad by Wiley Cash. And this came out back in 2017. And I just had to read this when I read the synopsis because it takes place in the county beside where I grew up, my hometown. And it really struck home for me because my grandparents and other relatives growing up, I heard about their work in the textile mills, and that's what this book is centered on. So I knew this was a book I had to read.
And have you read any other Wiley Cash, or is this the first one you've read?
This was the first one I've read and the only one. I do want to pick up a couple. I know he's got, I think, two other books, and he's a writing teacher, I know, in North Carolina. So I kind of follow along with him, and I'd love to read his other books, but I haven't taken that opportunity yet.
So I read This Dark Road to Mercy, which I think is his second book. I don't think it was his debut. And it's about this pair of sisters who are, quote unquote, kidnapped by their father who had been absentee. And they're kidnapped from a foster home where they were placed, I think, after their mother died. It's been a long time since I've read this. But I really liked it. It was kind of a mismatch of coming of age and a little bit of a thriller page turner in the second half. I really like his writing style, but I have not read The Last Ballad.
Well, he writes a very lyrical, beautiful way of writing, but it's very real also. And he really teaches you about the time period and really humanizes these people that, and to be honest, I had never really heard about the incident in the book that he wrote about, The Last Ballad. It's about a textile worker, a woman, a mother who was left destitute and was working this menial textile job and found herself abandoned. And when the promise of better pay and fair treatment comes through the unions, she decides to leave her job and take up the cause to the detriment of her family and her kids. But it's a beautiful book about strength and family ties. And I just really fell in love with it. And also with the personal touch of it being something that I could picture my ancestors right there alongside with her in those textile mills. That was just something very appealing to me.
Absolutely. Is it based on an actual real person?
Yes.
Like this is a real story that did happen. Okay.
Yes, it's based on a true story. And you'll see that in most of my picks. I believe that's something I tend to gravitate towards, is taking a real story and humanizing it and making it come alive to people in today's world. And he did this, I think, is a masterful way he did this in this book.
Yeah, I love books that do that too, that kind of take something that happened in real life or a real person that actually existed and then sort of using the author's imagination, expand on that for a novel. I love that kind of book.
Yes. I always love to mention historical sites that go along with books. This book, if you're ever in Charlotte, there's the Levine Museum of the New South, and I highly encourage you and anyone to go to that. And they have actual working little room that's a textile mill, and it actually has the sounds of what a textile mill is. So you can hear how loud it is, and you can, you know, touch the cotton and see the weaving and the spinners, and it just brings the book to life in front of you when you see this, what these workers went through.
Oh, that's really cool. All right. That was The Last Ballad by Wiley Cash, and that came out in 2017, so not super old.
Right.
And tell us about the second old book you love.
Well, the second old book I love is a nonfiction book. It's Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy by Karen Abbott, and it came out in 2014. And this time period, the Civil War time period that she writes about, is my favorite time period to study. In college, I did my senior thesis on comparing Northern and Southern women's diaries.
Ooh.
I love reading women's diaries, and you really get the minutia of life, but you also get it interspersed with these major battles and these major things that are happening in the country. So I love that. And I think Karen Abbott did an amazing job in this book of really tying Southern women and Northern women together and showing how different they were, but also how similar they were. You know, fascinated by the battles, but really what was happening on the home front, and particularly in the South where the war was really being fought on their literal doorsteps. I can put myself in these people's shoes and really feel empathy for their plight. And this book is actually, it's nonfiction, like I said, but it reads like a novel, a narrative nonfiction. I love those type of books. I think that really draws in people who maybe don't really like history, but they want to hear a good story. Well, a lot of times the true story is actually better than anything you could ever make up. So these narrative nonfiction books, I think, do a great job to show that.
So I read this book back when it came out, and I can talk more about that in a bit, but I just want to add one quick thing right now.
Yeah.
In my review, I think I titled my review, Truth is Stranger Than Fiction.
Yeah, yes.
To your point.
Exactly. Like you read this, and you're just like, I can't believe this actually really happened, but it did. And so this book profiles four amazing women, two from the North, two from the South. One was a spy for the North, and two were spies for the South. And then a woman who pretended to be a man, she could fight for the North. And it really makes you admire all of them for their pluck, their tenacity, and their cunning intellect. Because back then, women were seen as, you know, dainty, innocent creatures who couldn't possibly be hiding, you know, a troop missive in their hair. And my favorite woman that she profiles is Elizabeth Van Loo, who actually was based right here in Richmond. So you can go to the spot where her house stood, right on Church Hill, right in front of St. John's Church. I love going there and imagining her sitting there in the capital of the Confederacy, being a Unionist and being a Union spy. She talks a lot about how she did that. She had friended Captain Butler, who was out at Fort Monroe, who was a Union general. And so she would send coded messages to him, using, I think, lemon juice to write coded messages. And then she also was instrumental in helping people escape from the Union prisoners, escape from the Big Libby prison that was here, the POWs that were here.
One of my favorite parts of this book were the small anecdotes that had to do with the methods that they used to spy.
Yes.
I mean, they were so creative. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, because again, it's been a long time since I read this book, but didn't the Washington, D.C. secessionist, so basically the opposite of Elizabeth Van Loo, I think her name was Rose, didn't she use her window blinds to signal messages in Morse code?
Yes, I believe that's correct. They were very wily, definitely.
Yeah, y'all, and as I've mentioned already, I did read this book back when it came out. I really loved it. And I have trouble with like dry history nonfiction. This, as you said, I will co-sign. It is not dry. It is very readable. It feels like fiction. And the story is crazier than probably somebody could make up writing fiction.
Yes, definitely. It would pair well with a visit to the American Civil War Museum in Richmond because it tells the stories of the Civil War from women's point of view, from different perspectives. It's not just about the battles and what the men were doing. It also includes women and the enslaved persons. And you can actually see some of the spy techniques used there.
That was Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy by Karen Abbott, and that came out in 2014. And tell me about the first new book you love.
Well, the first new book I love is a historical fiction book that came out in 2019, and it's called Time After Time by Lisa Grunewald. And I picked this up after hearing about it on multiple book podcasts in the summer of 2019. I love learning about big cities like New York. But at first, I wasn't sure I'd really like this book because it does have a little bit of a different element. It's not as realistic as I would like.
That's what I was thinking when I read the premise.
Yes. It's very surprising that I liked it, but I've realized after kind of analyzing my reading life, I don't mind a little bending of minor rules like time travel or the sci-fi element that's in this book if I'm learning about a historical time period or place.
Oh, okay.
So if it actually really happened and there's this little quirk in it, then I don't mind reading that.
That's good to know, and that's good to realize things like that about yourself and about your reading taste. I have trouble with books that are not grounded in reality, but I have liked a couple that the author particularly handled the non-reality part really well. So like I loved 11/22/63, even though I generally don't like time travel books. And I loved Nothing to See Here last year by Kevin Wilson, which had sort of a magical realism element where children caught fire. But I think if the author handles it really well, I am amenable to that, even though normally I would kind of shy away from that. So you're saying that Lisa Grunewald handled it really well.
Yes.
And you also are a little bit hesitant about that kind of stuff, but this was okay for you.
Yes, definitely. I definitely am much more grounded in reality in most of my books, but this book was just so captivating and the story was just magical. It takes place in Grand Central Terminal in New York City. And you learn about the terminal from the Roaring Twenties through the Great Depression all through to World War II. And so I loved hearing the stories and reading about the way the terminal itself changed throughout the years from the party atmosphere of the 20s. And then she describes the 30s with the Great Depression and basically tumbleweeds or, you know, the dust balls rolling through the terminal and the so many people kind of laying there who didn't have anywhere else to go. And then when the war effort gets underway and how the terminal was transformed, basically where troops were arriving and leaving. And I just loved seeing that one building through so many different time periods.
I think I would love that part of it. I think sort of the evolution of Grand Central Terminal would be interesting.
Yes. And she does a great job with that. And then the actual storyline is handled in such a way, it's not really time travel. It's a little sci-fi, but it's a wonderful love story. And you really get to know the characters and you fall in love with Joe and Nora are the two main characters and their timeless love story. You just fall in love with them. So I know this book, of course, would pair well with a visit to Grand Central Terminal.
Of course.
The next time that I go there, I'm going to be looking for the spot where Nora came back every year.
Awesome. That's Time After Time by Lisa Grunewald, and that came out in June. All right. Tell us about the second new book you love. And this one, per your pattern, is going to be nonfiction.
Yes. So this is nonfiction, historical nonfiction. And this book came out last spring, and it's called The League of Wives by Heath Hardage Lee. And I actually got to meet Heath, the author, at the Junior League of Richmond Book and Author Dinner back last spring. And I was very captivated by her narrative nonfiction book. about the wives of the American POWs during the Vietnam War. And this was something I, growing up, hadn't really heard a lot about. I didn't know a lot about this time period and what these wives went through. I mean, we all knew about POWs. You know, you hear read about that in history class. But to read this book and really know how the women transformed themselves from wives and moms who were used to kind of towing the party line, they broke from this tradition to get their husbands back home. And it was just very powerful. You just want to stand up and cheer when they finally get someone to listen to them. And President Nixon actually really is instrumental in helping them bring these POWs home. And it just, you just makes you want to clap your hands. And our local museum, actually, the Virginia Museum of History and Culture, had an exhibit with the wives' clothes and their newspapers, letters, and other memorabilia. And so that was really neat to pair the book with a visit there. And that exhibit actually is touring. So it's going to be in the Nixon Library in May. And I'm actually going to California this summer. So I'm going to go see it again when I'm out there.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah. So at the exhibit, and they talk about it in the book, the POWs were sending these coded messages home to their wives saying, yes, we're being tortured. You know, this is horrible conditions. They are not adhering to the covenants that they've agreed to. And the Johnson administration wouldn't listen, and they didn't want anyone else to know about it. And the women were finally able to break out and be able to tell the media. And that really was the reason that these men got to come home.
So I have a very strange connection to this book, which I have not read yet, which is actually embarrassing. It's on my audio TBR, and I'm going to listen to it this year for sure. But I grew up, I don't know, 4 or 5 streets away from Phyllis Galante, who is one of the wives.
Yes.
And I know her children. So I always knew vaguely about this story and her background. And I don't know all the details, so I am interested to read the book. But I did know that her husband, Paul, was, you know, a POW in Vietnam, and she was very instrumental in getting him out. I did not know that it was this whole group of wives and there were other POWs involved, and it was kind of a coordinated effort. I didn't realize that as I was growing up, but I am very interested to read this, and I am going to read it very soon. Listen to it, I guess, very soon. Well, I like the direction that we're going with this episode with girl power, but girl power back in the day when it was not fashionable, or I guess it was more common than we realize. And now we're learning that. But
yeah,
when it was not the thing to do.
Right.
All right. So that was The League of Wives by Heath Lee, and that came out in April. And tell us about the book you did not love.
Well, I'm typically easy to please with books, even if it's not something that's in my wheelhouse. I usually power through just because I'm a recovering completist. I say recovering because it still like pains me when I stop reading a book, because I'm always like, but what if it gets redeeming in the end and I need to know about it?
Look, there's hope for you yet. I used to finish every single book I started, and you know where I stand now on this.
So it's very hard for me to say that there's a book that I don't like, because I typically, like I said, I typically can get through any book and it's fine. But I'm in a local book club with my friends, and there's only been one book in all of that. I think we've been meeting since 2014. So in the almost six years that we've been meeting, that I started and got about 50, 60 pages in and was like, you know what? This is not for me. I just cannot even read this book. And it's Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
A classic.
Yes, a classic. So I don't feel so bad saying it, but since it's, from what I remember, is, you know, it's a dystopian future. I really do not dislike dystopian books in general. So that's kind of, I think, going back to the Enneagram type 2 HSP in me. I just know those aren't going to be the type of books that I like.
Right.
This book, though, is being part of a good book club. I wanted to read it, but I just cannot get into it. And I just don't like anything dark or twisty or weird like this. And so I just cannot get through it.
How did the rest of your book club feel about it?
There were some folks that really liked it. So a lot of the books we read, maybe 3 or 4 of the books a year, are usually kind of dark, twisty thrillers. And so I tend to
not go those months.
I skip those months sometimes. So
fair enough.
Yeah. But there have been some books that we've read that were dark and twisty, like Gone Girl or something, you know, where right. I'm like, okay, I'm glad I got through that. That was such a huge phenomena anyway. But typically anything dystopian, I haven't read The Hunger Games. I have no interest. I don't like any sort of alternate reality where there's
fighting to the death.
Right. Yeah. I don't want anything like that. So that is just not something for me.
Now, I have not read Fahrenheit 451, which probably surprises exactly nobody who's listening to this, because we all know that I'm extremely not well-read in the classics. And I feel like in high school, we read lots of things like Willa Cather, things like that. I just don't feel like we read... I guess I did read Hemingway, but anyway, I did not read Fahrenheit 451. I didn't even know what it was about until I researched for this episode. But the premise is firefighters that actually burn books.
Yes.
Because they live in a world where TV is king.
Right.
The whole theme is like censorship of information and knowledge, right?
Yes.
So what tripped you up? Was it more the plot or was it the writing style? Because when I went on Goodreads, a lot of people... in their reviews had talked about how the writing style is just not manageable.
Yes, I believe it's probably a combo of both, but really it's more about the plot. I don't like I said, really unrealistic, very dark and hopeless books.
Hopeless. Okay, that's it.
Yeah.
I got it. Yeah, I can see how, without having read it, just knowing the premise of Fahrenheit 451, I can see how that is hopeless.
Yeah.
All right, so that was Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, published in 1953. All right, tell us about the new release you're excited about.
Well, one of my favorite historical writers, Jennifer Schiaverini, has a new book coming out on June 2nd called Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters, a novel. And she writes really realistic historical fiction about women, so real women. So I've read her books about Elizabeth Van Loo. She's actually got one about Elizabeth Van Loo that we were talking about earlier called The Spy Mistress that is wonderful. And she's written books about Elizabeth Cleckley, who was a former enslaved woman who became Mary Lincoln's dressmaker. And so about the relationship between the two of them, which is really fascinating. And she writes in a way that makes her characters empathetic, and you just really can put yourself in their shoes. And I love that through her writing, I can visualize a time period based on her descriptions. So this new book sounds fascinating because it's about Mary Lincoln again, but it's about her sisters and how they related with Mary. And so you don't hear a lot about her sisters. You know, she was from Kentucky. And so I know at least one of her sisters' husbands fought on the Confederate side during the war and was killed and came to live at the White House during the war. So you can imagine the tension there. And I'm just really excited to imagine what took place at the White House during this time.
Yeah, I didn't realize she had a number of sisters either. And when I was researching this for the show, their relationship was really fractured during that time because some of their husbands were on the Confederate side and some of their husbands were on the Union side.
Right.
And in the Lincoln administration.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I feel like is probably good fodder for a good story.
Yes, definitely. I think there's a lot there that she can do. And that the great thing with historical fiction is that you can pretend to know what they were thinking and feeling. And that's one thing that's a trigger for me in nonfiction is I've read a couple of nonfiction, historical nonfiction, where they tend to say that. And I'm like, that makes me nervous. I like my historical fiction that does that because you have the license to do that there.
Have you ever read We Were the Lucky Ones by Georgia Hunter?
Yes, based on your show.
Oh, good.
Yes. When you interviewed the author, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'd seen it in the bookstore. But after listening to your interview with the author, I said, okay, I'm going to go grab that right now and read it. And it's one of my very favorite books, historical fiction books I've ever read.
Oh, good. So the reason I bring that up is Georgia Hunter, the author, when she was shopping this book around to, I believe she'd already had an agent. It was either she was shopping it around to agents or her agent was shopping it around to publishers, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
She had a couple people say, we will buy it, but we want to publish it as nonfiction.
Mm.
Because the story is so unbelievable that if you publish it as fiction, it'll just seem like the story is so unbelievable that readers aren't going to buy into it, right?
Right.
But the reason she really wanted to keep it as fiction was so that she could do exactly what you said, get into the hearts and minds of these characters more than she ever could in nonfiction.
Yes. Well, I'm glad she did because it was wonderful.
I agree. All right.
That was Mrs. Lincoln's Sisters by Jennifer Schiaverini coming out on June 2nd.
And I wanted Jada to say it. Normally I say it, but I wanted her to say it because she said the author's last name so beautifully the first time. So I didn't want to go butcher it on the heels of that. Well, thank you so much, Jada. This has been fun, especially with our local Richmond connection, and can get to talk about a couple Richmond spots around town as well.
Yes. Yes. I'm so glad that we got to do that. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Before we go, tell everybody where they can find you online.
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at The History Mom, and on Twitter at mom_history. And my blog is at thehistorymom.com.
And if you're planning to visit any historical sites, especially with your kids, check out her blog. If you'd like to get bonus episodes of the podcast, including superlatives episodes with every full-length guest, and the newest feature for patrons, which is a monthly bonus episode of me doing the book recommendation segment of the show. So every month I will share two old books I love, two new books I love, one book I don't love, and one upcoming release I'm excited about. If you would like to get these bonus episodes, you can subscribe to support the show on Patreon for $5 a month. And there is a link in the show notes and a link in my Instagram bio to do that. Next week will be a full-length episode featuring Liz Moore, the author of the fantastic literary mystery that I've been seeing all over Instagram lately, Long Bright River, which I loved. And it was also a December Book of the Month pick. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.